This week's Pensioners for Independence podcast comes to you courtesy of our Edinburgh and Lothians Pensioners for Indy group. And a couple of weeks back, they organised a talk online via Zoom with Andy Anderson. And that's what you're about to hear. It's called Economics and Currency in a New Scotland. Now, it was after the 2014 referendum that Andy decided to do something about getting the message over to Scots about how we could create the kind of economy that would best support our nation, how we could set up our own currency. And he's been writing, speaking and also running study groups on these topics ever since. Interesting chap, Andy. He's born in Glasgow. First job was as a miner in Fife. He was in the Cameron Highlanders, a piper. And later on, he was an elected official to the NUM. From there, he received a scholarship, actually from the Union, to study at Ruskin College in Oxford. And later on, he won a state scholarship to New College, Oxford, from where he graduated with a degree in PPE, which isn't got anything to do with COVID. It stands for, I'm sure you know, politics, philosophy and economics. He worked for the National Union of Public Employees for a long time and then retired to Sky. He's author of several books, and you can find them on his own website if you just Google Andy Anderson. So here's the talk, Economics and Currency in a New Scotland. And after Andy has spoken, there's then an interesting discussion with question and answers from the audience. Here it is.
I just want to do a sort of a formal hello to everybody who has come on today. Thank you very, very much for joining us today. Lots of you have met Andy Anderson before. Those who haven't, you'll find him a very interesting talker, and I really hope you enjoy what he has to say. Okay, so I think now we'll just let Andy Anderson do his thing. Very welcome, Andy.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Julie. Now, it's 3 years since I came over to Edinburgh and had the meeting there. Same subject, the question of economics. Now, economics and currency are very important issues. They were vital in the last referendum. When we were in the referendum the last time, in the latter stages of the referendum, the issue of currency was very significant, and it may well be that it was the main factor that lost the referendum for us because of the response to that. So it's a subject that we need to take seriously and we need to look at carefully. Myself and Ronnie Morrison, during that campaign, were most unhappy with how the SNP's position was on the question of currency. And we saw it as being a major problem, and one which would emerge near the end of the campaign because there were inconsistencies in it, and we were afraid that that would come out. Fortunately, there has been a big change since then, and people are a lot more aware of the issue, and there's been changes. And indeed, there are changes taking place all the time on that subject right now. But it's still a vitally important issue, and it will come back again, I would predict, at the latter stage of any future referendum. It'll come back again in the form of the Project Fear, the attack on people and their fears and their concerns, just before the voting takes place. That's when they'll apply it. It's important for us, therefore, to look at how we can advise people about this issue, explain about the issue, and get people knowledgeable enough to recognise what these fears are and how to deal with them. And then when that problem arises during the election, they'll be much more comfortable with dealing with the questions. That's my objective, and that's what I've been working on, myself and Ronnie, initially by writing the initial book, Moving On, and then later writing another book to make it easier to look at the address the subject. But I've also been running courses, and I want to do that again, and hopefully do it with this system, with the online system, and talking to people about the issues and being able to get the ideas across. The question of economics and currency is seen by many people, and it's portrayed as being very complicated and difficult, something that you need experts to advise you on. Ordinary people can't deal with this subject. They need experts, they need advice. It's actually not true. The issues are fundamentally, the fundamental issues are relatively simple. And most people can understand these issues. They can understand the fundamentals of how the economy works, and what the currency is and how it operates. If a wee bit of attention is given to it. And that's our task. That's what we're trying to do. I'm fairly confident that we can do this because I've been doing it for some time in various parts of Scotland to quite a number of people, many of whom had never, ever before attended any sessions on economics or knew anything about the subject. And most of the people that attended these sessions, I have to say the attendance was very consistent, in that we had fairly high numbers to start with, and they continued right through the sessions. So people were interested. And most of the people at the end were quite knowledgeable about the issues. So it worked. So I know it works. And I see now people writing in the press on this subject who attended some of the sessions, and they're very knowledgeable about the subject. They've developed their interest. So, yes, I know that this works because people have picked it up and they've been running with the ball. So I, to some extent, I'm happy that we can develop these sessions. Now, the books that we have written, and we'll refer to that first because it's against the background of those books that we've been doing the discussions. I've got a website, Anderson Publications Limited, and it's www.andersonpublications, all one word, lowercase, .co.uk. That's the website. So you'll find the books on there. Now, we wrote the books because we thought that we need to get to the fundamentals of this issue and try to get it sorted out, and in a simple way that most people would understand. And the sessions that we're running is just to strengthen that position. But just by writing books is not going to be the answer. We knew that we have to do something more solid than that. And that's why I'm keen on these sessions. And today, what I'm hoping is that people listening to this will think, well, I would like to know more about this, and I'd like to get involved, and get involved in one of the sessions. We may well be doing it in this way, online, or as we did initially, come and meet people, small groups, and discuss the issues. The issues really are pretty straightforward, although they're not in the way that you will have seen them. I'll deal first of all with the money illusion, the money issue, money or currency. There is a quite clear distinction between money and wealth. Money is not wealth, although it often seen as wealth. And so when we talk about, well, where is the government going to get the money to pay for it? a frequent question that is raised in economics, and people scratch their head about how do you get the money? Is it the bank? Do you borrow it? How do you get the money? In actual fact, a country like Scotland, which is a very wealthy country, has no difficulty whatsoever in producing money. Money is valueless. Money has no intrinsic value at all. It's wealth that is important. And Scotland is a very wealthy country. So the question of money, producing money, is not a difficult question. First of all, you need the political power to do it. And secondly, you need to have your own currency. That's why I was unhappy about the last referendum where we were going to share in the pound. That was never a good idea, because you could have political independence but no economic independence. If you want independence, you have to have economic independence and power as well. And so you need your own currency, and you need to control that currency if you're going to influence the economy. So the first thing is, what is money? What's it all about? Can we do it ourselves? The answer, actually, if you look around the world, is quite simple. Iceland can do it. Iceland's got a population about the size of Edinburgh. And they have their own currency. And they have their own central bank. And they can produce their own currency. And if you look at Iceland compared to Scotland, there are some similarities, but Scotland's a much wealthier country in terms of its resources. So if Iceland can do it, certainly Scotland can do it. You know, it's straightforward. So that's the first thing that needs to be understood and needs to be looked at in some of its fundamentals. The second thing is that this wealth that exists in Scotland in the context of natural resources, how do you turn that into wealth in your pocket and income for the people in Scotland? We have all this great wealth, and yet we look around Scotland and there's great poverty. There's weakness. There's, you know, weaknesses in the public sector. We can't afford this, we can't afford that, and yet we have all this wealth. So the economic question of how do you develop the natural resources into wealth in people's pockets? How do you distribute it? How do we make sure that we have a good, strong health service, that we have investment in the future for education and for our population? How do we do these things? This is a question not of not having the wealth. The wealth is there. It's a question of how we manage it. It's badly managed at the moment under this United Kingdom, and it's managed in the interests of the vested interests of a few. How do we organise it in a way that it is much more widely distributed and more effectively used? That's the second part of the question. That's the economic side of the currency issue. And the other question that's important is, well, all that sounds all right. A lot of people have talked about having a better society and a fairer one, but can we do it? And how do we do it? Can that be done? How does it work? How does this work in economic terms? Can you explain how to move from where we are to the situation that we want to go to? Yes, we can. We can look at that. We can explain how this can be done. That's part of the process. The other question is this process that I'm talking about purely theoretical, something that's never actually been tried before or done before? Is it pure theory, or is there practical examples of what I'm talking about? And the answer to that is yes, there are practical examples. It's not just a question of theory. We have seen changes in Britain carried out in a particular way in the past. Britain at the end of the Second World War was a poverty-stricken country in a whole number of ways. It was in huge debt. And yet Britain, the Labour government, the Attlee government, in a period of 6 years, invested huge amounts of money, created the National Health Service, created the public services, many of which have been sold off to others. We had our own electricity company, our own airways, our airlines. We had the gas company. We had the coal mines that belonged to the people. We had a whole lot of industries that we owned, that we had invested in and had created. And we'd done all that and came out in a period of 6 years. And that government came out of office with less debt than when it went in. So it spent a lot of money. It created a lot of wealth. That wealth lasted for a long time. The National Health Service hasn't been sold off yet, but the vested interests may well sell it off. They've sold parts of it off. But all of that was put together in a very short period of time and invested in by Britain, by the British people. Now, the way they did that, it's called Keynesian economics. Keynes was alive at the time and was advising the Labour government. The way they did that is not a mystery, and it's not difficult to understand. And it can be done again, and it could be done in Scotland if we had control of the, certainly we need control of the currency as well to do that, but we could do it. So all of these things are possible and can be done. That's basically what we are trying to do, to get people to focus on this issue, to see how important it is, look at it to say, look, this is something I should be involved in, not something that I leave to experts. This is something I ought to have a view about and look at. And then to look at it and see if they themselves can understand the issues and can make sense of it. I promise you that if you look at these issues in the way that we are attempting to address them and read the books, you will have a very good understanding and you will be able to recognize what is required. And you need to be in that position to advise others when it comes to the referendum and people tell you that Scotland cannot afford to do this, that, and the next thing. You tell them, yes, we can, and this is how we do it. That's basically what I'm trying to do. All right.
What are you doing?
Question? Thanks, Andy. If you go on to the left where it says public chat, I think there's one question there at the moment. If anyone else has questions, please put them on.
Yeah, they're setting up the central bank. It's a question asking about this, setting up a central bank, and is it only a sovereign state that can do that? Well, the answer to that is yes, because a central bank is a bank that is in a position to issue currency, to issue notes. And today, currency today is what is called a fiat currency. They are fiat currencies, which means in the past, you had currencies which were backed by gold or silver or something else. But currencies today are not. They're backed by the promise of the government that is issuing the currency. So for a central bank to issue currency, they've got to have a government which takes responsibility for ensuring that currency functions properly and controlling that currency. So yes, the two are related. We have to have independence before we can have
Thanks, Andy. I'm having trouble typing, so I'm just going to ask my question. I agree with everything you're saying, but this is a problem that we've all faced for some time and are going to continue to face by the look of it, and that is there is a disconnect between the SNP and the people who are out there on the street talking when we get the opportunity, because the SNP have still got their what's it called? The Growth Commission, thank you. Andrew Wilson's Growth Commission, and now the group they've set up to sort of grow Scotland in the future is just packed with neoliberal people. Yes. So we seem to be going in the direction, they seem to be going in the direction that the Scottish people don't want.
Yeah, well, yes, that's very much a problem. But it's not as bad a problem as it was. Because in the at the last referendum, the position was we were going to share the pound, and that was very much trapping us in a neoliberal economic situation. Mm-hmm. We've got out of that now. We're out of that now. We've now got this. The Growth Commission is, in my view, well, Tim Rideout tore it apart at the SNP conference. The 6 points, which are utter nonsense, that they're economically illiterate. You know, so there's no real case here at all. But what it is a harking back to let's stay within the pound. We're safer in the pound. We know what's what. Bankers like the system that currently operates because it's very good for bankers. So it's hardly surprising that Andrew Wilson finds it a fascinating, interesting area. However, it's absolutely no good for the rest of us, you know. And people are gradually recognizing that this is not sustainable. And just look at what's happening in the world now. I wonder if Andrew Wilson would have argued exactly as he did about the pound if he'd seen exactly where we are now, compared to where we were when he issued it.
Yeah.
The world has changed significantly. I don't know if there'll be a pound in a year's time.
Yeah.
I don't know if the pound will survive. That's not a silly question. That's a very significant and important question. Mm-hmm. Because the international financial system is changing dramatically. Now, we can put all that to one side. I treat it with the contempt that it deserves, because people have got more knowledge than that. I'll give you an example of the Growth Commission. Andrew Wilson acknowledges in the commission itself that Scotland doesn't have a national debt, not one penny national debt. He then spends some time explaining to us how we should pay that off. If you don't have a debt, why do you spend a lot of time working out how you're going to pay it? You know, somebody else has got a debt. You know, it's not Scotland's. It never was Scotland. It's not actually the people in England that have a debt either. It's the banks and the wealthy who've organized the system who are looking for us debt. So if you get somebody who tells you you've got a debt and that you haven't got a debt, and then what's that, how are you going to pay it back? You have to treat that with a wee bit of contempt.
Excellent. Thanks very much, Andy. I see we've got another question on the public chat, Andy, if you want to have a look at that.
Taxation, yeah. Right. Interesting question. It has to be said that in the sessions that we're running, we can't provide a full education for somebody in economics. But what we can do is deal with some of the fundamentals. Here's one of the fundamental questions, the question on taxation. Now, if you look at the general view of what we're told, what people believe, is that you cannot have public services unless you've got taxation. It's a taxation that pays for the public services. Mm-hmm. And normally, when they say that, they mean income tax, tax from you and I and other people to do that. Now, in actual fact, in economic terms, if you've got your own currency, you don't need taxation at all to run your public services. You can run it in a different way. And in any event, even when you've got a taxation, effective taxation system, you get the money in later. You have to do the investment first and then get the money. So it's not the tax that pays for the investment. That's just not valid. You know, that's not how it works. The other thing is that the taxation system that we've got before in the early days of capitalism, at a time when Adam Smith was writing about capitalism in his book in Edinburgh, the main taxation system at that time was land. Land was the source of taxation. We could move back to a land-based type of taxation, and that would be much more efficient in a number of ways and do a much better job. So what taxation do you need? Where would it apply? What system, what type of system? These are all important questions. Right, two questions. The thing about credit ratings and the thing about increasing our financial power. That assumes that we stay within a devolved system and we get additional powers, powers to borrow, etc., etc. Let me deal with that first. That is totally unsatisfactory. That would mean that we've got no... It's more important to have control over your economy than it is... You know, political independence is worthless if you don't have control of your economy. If you're part of the of another economy and you are getting certain powers and rights to operate within that, you're not able to control your economy. You wouldn't be able to do a lot of things which are fundamentally required. So we couldn't change our economy if we were in that position. So it's not satisfactory. As far as credit organizations are concerned, international credit organizations, they're phony on the whole. They're like much of the international financial system. They're phony. They operate on a political basis, not an economic one. So I wouldn't give that much consideration whatsoever. Scotland in the future, if it runs its economy correctly and has its own currency in the central bank, will have no problem with international exchange, which is where credit union credit systems are supposed to guarantee you that you get good international exchange. We would have no problem with international exchange if we have an efficiently run economy. As I've already said, one of the wealthiest in the world, probably. We could, if we run it efficiently, then we have no problem with international exchange, which is what you really need a credit record for. Any other questions?
There's a question there from Olive, just above Mary.
Yep.
What should we do first? Right. The first thing we've got to do is we've got to have political independence. Because if we don't have political independence, we can't have all of the other things that we need, a central bank, etc., etc. But in order to do that, and you made the point earlier, there are different opinions, a big difference in opinion between myself and Andrew Wilson on the question of the currency, and we are both supporters of the Yes campaign. Well, that actually is not too much of a problem, because if you discuss the issue with others, as I have done, who've got different views on the currency than what we have, it's not really a problem, because we cannot do anything. I can't do anything about setting up a central bank until we've got political economy, political control. If we haven't got political control, the game's off. We can't do that anyway. So you have to postpone. So it's a two-stage process. Stage one, win political power. Stage two, set up the institutions for the sort of economy that you're going to run. Now, we can all agree on stage one. Our objective is to win the Yes campaign. So we can all agree that. And we've all now agreed that at some stage, even the Growth Commission agreed that at some stage, Scotland should have its own currency. So we say, right, I can agree with Andrew Wilson in terms of going into the election, the referendum. And if somebody asks me, The Unionist press says to me, but you're voting the same as Andrew Wilson, and he's got a different view from you on what, how the currency should be organised. I say, yes, but he hasn't got a different view from me on Scotland having its own currency. We both agree that that should be the case at some stage. He sees it different from me. But we'll sort that out after we get independent. We've got 3 years, it'll take 3 years at least, to set up the institutions that we need for the sort of economy that I'm talking about. These are 3 years in which our parliament will debate this line by line, issue by issue. Andrew Wilson and I will have lots of arguments then, but that'll be after independence. Up to now, and moving into independence, we are perfectly in agreement that there ought to be independence and that Scotland at some stage ought to have its own currency. The rest is for after the vote. We can deal with that in the normal democratic process. Any other questions? Right, yeah. Public and private ownership. Now, let me address that then. I talked about the Attlee government and all of the investment that they put in, fairly large amounts, and it was mainly public investment that went in. Now, when that happened, and when that happens at any time, and usually if you want fast investment in any situation, indeed even the Tories are now talking about public investment, because public investment is the fastest way to get investment into the economy to try and increase demand. So if you were going to do it, it would always start with public investment, because that's the best way. But once you start the process, because of what is called the multiplier, the Keynesian multiplier effect, that will engender, this initial investment in the public sector will engender investment in the private sector. The two are related, and it will create investment there. Now, in this type of economy. Now, in those circumstances, when it comes to economics, when it comes to the fundamentals, it doesn't make one bit of difference whether the investment is public or private. If it creates greater demand and grows the economy, it doesn't matter. Because the growth in the economy and the results of that, the wealth that comes from it, is depending on how it's shared out, which is an important issue. But the amount of wealth that comes from it is the same. Whatever way you do it, the distribution might be different, but the amount is the same. So it doesn't really matter. Now, we wouldn't need to bother too much. Although, initially, in the situation that we're likely to be in, where the economy has had a really hard hit, and it will do, it is having a hard hit, and we will. And if we want to build it up again, it'll be mainly in the public sector that we'll have to concentrate to get that going. But our objective, presumably, would be that once you get the public sector moving, that would engender activity in the private sector, particularly in the small private sector, small business, medium-sized business. They would get greater demand, and it would help to grow their businesses as a result of the work that we are talking about. So fundamentally, from an economic point of view, it's irrelevant whether it's public or private. In terms of distribution, it's probably a lot wiser if it's public investment. And in terms of the ability to do it quickly, it's got to be public investment. Right?
Thanks for that, Andy. There's only one other question, just a wee one that we put on, and that was, how quickly do you think we can set up our own currency? Can we do that on day one of actual independence after the transition period? Thank you.
Well, right. We say in the book, moving on, I think we say 3 years, or about 3 years, because we can't do it on day one. Because in order to set up a currency, we would have to have a whole lot of institutions. We'd have to have a banking, a real complete reform of the banking system. We talk about full reserve banking being necessary. A whole change in the banking system. We'd have to have, and we suggest, constitutional changes which secure the financial system in a way that doesn't happen now. We're talking about that being done. We're talking about a number of changes in institutions, including control and regulation of the financial system. To do that, you would have to, the Parliament would have to agree it line by line. They'd have to set it up and it'd have to be running. So it's 3 years before you would be in a position to actually change your currency. In the meantime, you would use the new sterling, not share in sterling, as was talked about before, but use sterling during that 3 year period.
So given that, would that not put us at risk by not having a lender of last resort?
A lender of last resort. Let's let me deal with that question of the lender of last resort. Who is the lender of last resort? If you look at the media, they'll tell you in Britain that it's the Bank of England. But it's not the Bank of England. It's you and I. We're the lender of last resort. Mm. Because what happened when the banks were in crisis and the Bank of England couldn't meet it? Who paid it? Where did this money come from to pay out all the banks who were bankrupt? Billions and billions of pounds. 64 billion to the Royal Bank alone. Where did all this money come from? It didn't come from the Bank of England. It came from you and I. It came from taxpayer. Well, so we, in the final analysis, we are the lender of last resort. And we will be in Scotland. It's the citizens of Scotland. We won't have to borrow so much because the economy isn't as big. But we would still be the lender of last resort. So in that context, what is important really, this is back to this question, what is money? Does money have any wealth? What is important is wealth. Does the country have the wealth? Does it have the natural resources? And does it have the labor skills and the managerial skills to turn that wealth into resources, into goods and services for the rest of us? Yes, is the answer to that. Yes, it can be done. And the answer to the banking system is, let's have a rational, sensible banking system that serves the people and doesn't rob them, as the current one does.
That's excellent, and that's just what we want. There's there's two more questions, Andy. One from Robert Ingram and one from Pippa Plevin. They're right at the bottom of the chat.
Right. Yeah, educating politicians. Yes, that's true. Probably the politicians and the bankers and the media will be the last people that will get the message across, the education that is necessary. However, in order to make sure that they do listen, politicians will listen in the way that the SNP listened. I mean, we said earlier that the SNP had the policy of the Growth Commission. My understanding is that they don't actually have that as a policy. It was produced by the SNP, it was debated, it was never really accepted as SNP policy. And I think that probably it would have been by now if there hadn't have been such a reaction to it by people, and particularly at the SNP conference. And that's only because of the work that a lot of people have been doing to get the message over about the issue of currency, about these issues. And I think that a lot of politicians would have been surprised at the SNP conference at the knowledge of a lot of the ordinary delegates on the question of currency, which they wouldn't have expected, and which was probably a higher knowledge than they themselves have. So we have to educate the politicians by, first of all, educating our own groups and getting our groups understanding the issues, and then pressing the need for these changes on the politicians. There's been a lot of discussion in the media about whether whether the First Minister is keen on independence or not, whether she's fighting the campaign or not, and all of this nonsense. I don't accept any of that. I think that there are a number of things that need to be done in the route to independence. One of the things that needs to be done is that the SNP, as an elected government, need to do a very effective job as the government of the country today on today's problems. And today's problems, right at this moment, is the coronavirus. And fortunately, we have a First Minister who's probably the best politician in Europe, and he's doing a first-class job. So on that side of it, she's doing an excellent job, and the SNP government is doing well. And that's shown in the response of the voters. It's not enough, because when we get into the... It's enough to build up the momentum, and we've got to build up the momentum. But as we get in towards the... When the coronavirus becomes less of an issue, and we get into the elections and the move forward, we need to recognise, the SNP need to recognise, that we will only win independence with a broad support across Scotland. It won't be SNP. The slogan SNP both votes at the election is a party political idea. But independence is not party political, it's wider. We need a much wider view when it comes to the issue. We need to incorporate all this wide view for winning the vote, yes. As I said earlier, we don't have to agree with every aspect of what we do afterwards in an independent country, but we have to agree that we want an independent country, and we need to have a common approach there. So that's how I see the issue, that we have we support the government, what they're doing now. We're fortunate, and the SNP are doing a first-class job, and they're doing well. When we get to the elections, my own view is that I will vote for the SNP in the constituency, but I won't vote for the SNP in the second vote, because that will be throwing the vote away. That vote will be thrown away, and the Tories and Labour and the Liberals will pick it up. They'll get the advantage of it if my vote is discounted. So I'll use that vote to look for another independence candidate and vote for one or other of those to make sure that we have a wider spread. That won't affect the SNP in terms of government. The SNP are very likely to get through, and may well get through with a majority anyway. But it'll affect the Tories and Labour in the Scottish Parliament, and we've got to do that. If we undermine them, they are using the media against us. If we can undermine them, we weaken the media in the process. So that is one of the ways I see us moving forward. But my task is to work on the economic issue and the currency issue, and to work until the last day before the vote, to try and convince people not to be frightened off by the nonsense that they will get fed by the UK government and the media.
Thanks, Andy. It looks as though there's another one from Daniel, and there's another one from Pippa. I think you've partly answered Pippa's already, to be honest, but I'll leave you to have a look at them yourself. Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, Daniel's question, the power grab, is a typical example of what I was talking about. They will, that already the Chancellor is saying, and Laura Coonsberg is repeating, that Scotland on their own wouldn't be able to survive if they weren't in the UK. So we'll get all of that. We'll get all of this stuff. But we need to be able to respond. It's a nonsense. If you analyse the issue, it's a nonsense, and you can put the argument back. But we need to be able to get that across. We need to do the work on it. So I think that one of the good things about them trying to snatch the power on the Brexit issue is that the Brexit issue is actually another big hole in the head for the Tories. It's going to be a right mess. What is happening, of course, is that the other parties are recognising that they've been dragged into a hole here. So Labour and the Lib Dems are now prepared to align themselves with the Scottish Government rather than go down further into that hole. That's helpful, and it's partly a process in the way that the Scottish Government has conducted themselves. So I think it's helpful, but it doesn't solve the main problem in that we're going to go into that hole, and we've got to find a way to fight our way out of it. Incidentally, on that issue, I think we ought to be arguing much more strongly that we should be in the same position as Northern Ireland as far as the EU market is concerned, because if we're part of the UK, and that's available in the UK to have the arrangements to be tied in with the single market, then we in Scotland should have that, because that would save us a lot of difficulty and a lot of problem, and it would undermine their argument about the grab of power, because they're grabbing power in areas which, if we stayed in the single market, we would have to have control of ourselves because of the EU. As the EU has it now. So that might be an important line for us to be arguing, to be in the position of Northern Ireland and have the same conditions as they've got. The other question. Yeah, the one about the election and the Indy parties. The reality is that the system we've got now was set up by people who were opposed to the SNP and to independence. And it was designed to try and make sure that that couldn't happen, that the SNP couldn't win a majority. That's how the system was designed, that's how it was set up. So it's hardly surprising that you have this problem of when you get a huge support for the SNP, as you're getting, and the SNP taking most of the seats, and possibly all, in this election that's coming, then the chances of getting a list seat are virtually nil. And the list seats will be handed out to those other parties who've lost out on the first vote. Now, if you look at what's happened in the past, the Greens tried to play this system as it's set up. And why we should stick to the rules that somebody else made for their purposes, not ours. The SNP wants us to stick to those rules and vote SNP in both. But that would be almost guaranteed that we would not only have a lot of votes discounted, but that the Labour and Tory would gain from that. The unionists would gain from that. And the unionist media would gain from that. Strikes me as it's obvious that what we should do is to say, right, the second vote, let's try and use our heads and intelligence and say, how best can we do it? My priority is, yes, I want an SNP government. No doubt about that. That's what I want. So my first vote goes for SNP. But I don't want to throw away my second vote. So my second vote is going to go for an independence party. At this moment, I couldn't say who. I've voted Green in the past in this situation, and I might vote Green the next time. But I'd look carefully at the people who were standing and what the chances were of making sure that we get independence people in. Because everyone we get in, we get a unionist out. But everyone we put in, we take out a unionist. You know, what's wrong with that? That seems to me is exactly the way we ought to be going. But that's out of my subject. My subject is economics.
Okay, you're talking about the groups that you're talking to, Andy.
Yeah. Well, if you can, if people are interested, if you can get people in groups of about five, then we can try it this way. We can try it with the online. We can try and put it together and do a session.
Okay.
Sounds good. And then life talk radio.